I'm finding it difficult to understand many aspects of Ansata conduct. Much of their behavioral norm would be defined by my program as unnecessary and unacceptable.
Mm-hmm. By my program as well, Data.
But if that is so, Captain, why are their methods so often successful? I've been reviewing the history of armed rebellion, and it appears that terrorism is an effective way to promote political change.
Yes, it can be, but I have never subscribed to the theory that political power flows from the barrel of a gun.
Yet there are numerous examples when it was successful. The independence of the Mexican state from Spain, the Irish unification of 2024, and the Kenzie Rebellion.
Yes, I'm aware of them.
Then would it be accurate to say that terrorism is acceptable when all options for peaceful settlement have been foreclosed?
Data, these are questions that mankind has been struggling with throughout history. Your confusion is only human.
I want to say this on air, which is, I just found out that that clip from Star Trek was banned in the UK for 17 years. 17 years they banned that shit.
It's bizarre.
Like,
isn't it?
From the Star Trek TNG episode. It was actually the one of Irish unification of 2024, because it's like talking about terrorism and stuff. I'm going to play it before the episode starts. So that's what we're here to talk about. How the British are still really mad.
They just won't give an inch. They won't give a single inch. They won't even let a science fictional future in which Ireland is unified go ahead.
Isn't that so funny? Oh, I love it. Chris, welcome back to the show. This is a patron-only show, so we're behind the velvet rope here.
Hello, patrons.
Hello. And you're coming back for another episode. We're going to do an episode of The Troubles, a patron-requested episode. That's going on the main feed. We haven't recorded that yet, so this is kind of like a sneak preview to that one. Because I guess this is, like, this could be, like... I mean, what we're talking about today, this, you know, Irish unification of 2024, I'm just going to call it that with like a question mark. Is this like the end of the Troubles? You know, like, are the Troubles going to end with this? I mean, obviously it's not that simple, but I think it's an interesting way to sort of tackle these two sort of sister topics, which is, you know, what after partition, you know, what has been the story of Ireland, the history of Ireland after partition? It's been like a century, right? More than a century, like a century and 5 years. So it's an interesting thing, but can you, first of all, introduce... Well, yeah, everybody knows who you are. You don't have to introduce yourself. Everybody knows you. Your episode is one of the most downloaded of all my episodes.
That's unbelievable.
Top 8 or something like that.
Oh, that's
top
so 6, flattering.
I can't remember. Yeah, people love your episode.
Damn.
So... this means you have to start your own Irish history podcast, I regret to inform you.
It's really terrible. Since I did it, I've started having, we could do this as an episode. I could start thinking about that. And you kind of, it becomes addictive. I'm sure you can identify.
Because, it's the best. And we'll talk about it. But I won't harass you about this today. I'll keep extracting value, podcast value from your brain and not share you with the world. But... can you tell us, we are here to talk about this remarkable election that occurred last week. Tell us what happened.
Right. So what happened was, and I have the exact statistics here beside me, so I better pull them up so I don't screw it up. What happened was that Sinn Féin, the political wing of the Provisional IRA, secured 27 seats. The Democratic Unionist Party got 25. The Alliance Party got 17, other got 9, and we'll talk a little bit about what other means and what the other parties mean. The SDLP, the Social Democratic and Labour Party, got 8, and the traditional unionist voice got 1. And there were also 2 independent unionists and 1 people for profit TD. That's a lot of acronyms I've just thrown into the mix there. The salient point is the Sinn Féin was the largest party in Stormont in this parliament that was established by the Brits in order to retain the 6 counties of Ireland under its kind of protectorate, to keep it within the United Kingdom. As a clip was going around, it was very viral, of a BBC news broadcaster, presenter, I didn't read it, I just that classic thing where you take the tweet as read, I'm just going to believe that the video says this without checking it myself, said, made the point that the six counties, Ireland was partitioned and the six counties were kind of broken off precisely in order to ensure that this would never happen. That nationalists, Republicans, Catholics would never take control of the parliamentary assembly or never achieve anything like a representative voice. So that's the big change the selections brought in.
UK. I love it. Oh god, the political institution they created to like legitimize their partition and like theft of a huge chunk of the island, like has suddenly like it lasted a century, but now they have to deal with the consequences. I mean, it's nuts.
Yeah, and I'll pour cold water on some of the joy in just a few minutes, because that is that's what I'm here to do, I'm afraid.
Oh no, I want to cancel this episode. Let me have something nice.
So just a little bit of history on that, because you know, you'll get unionists and loyalists, they'll refer to the six counties as Ulster. You'll hear that being thrown around, an Ulster identity as being something that's distinct from Ireland. And Ulster is the fourth province in the Northwest. But actually, there are nine counties in Ulster. So beyond Antrim, Armagh, Derry, Down, Fermanagh and Tyrone, there are three others. It isn't Ulster, because the unionists who wanted to stay within the United Kingdom knew that they couldn't retain control over the Catholic majorities in those areas. You know, the six counties is a totally synthetic statelet. It's not a real polity in any real sense. So I just wanted to underline that. And in areas where you would have had nationalist majorities, particularly in local government, like in Derry, where there's one of the counties in which there's a larger Catholic or nationalist population, those districts were gerrymandered in order to ensure that wouldn't happen. So for the nearly 100 years, well, sorry, how long exactly? Say half a century in which the Stormont Assembly, the Northern Ireland Parliament, as it was initially set up by the Government of Ireland Act in 1920 by the Brits, functioned, there was only ever a unionist majority, the Ulster Unionist Party. It was UUP right the way down the line. There was a nationalist party. You remember that we talked about John Redmond's nationalist party that wanted very incremental home rule demands. They were there in this six counties parliament, led by Wee Joe Devlin, but they were in no way a decisive parliamentary voice. They were just, you know, they were just there, but they were the representative voice, such as it was, for the Catholic minority. So the troubles happen. We'll be getting more depth into exactly what that involved, so we'll just skim over that in that episode that we're going to do. So we'll just skip over the troubles and skip right to the constitutional settlement that brings an end to the troubles, which is the Belfast Agreement. It's also referred to as the Good Friday Agreement or of that nature. So Sinn Féin are the political wing of the IRA, which is waging this guerrilla war against the six county state. They are fighting for unconditional British withdrawal right the way along the line. That's what all their rank and file are steered by. This is what their leadership is talking about. That's the end goal. And when they engage with the Brits in negotiations, which are ongoing throughout the 70s and the 80s, it's not like they suddenly got them down to the table in the 90s. You know how these anti-imperialist wars go. There's always some form of connection that's happening, often behind closed doors, because it would be inconvenient for kind of both sides of the conflict to acknowledge it. But eventually the Sinn Féin leadership, Gerry Adams, Martin McGuinness in particular, are selling the rank and file on the idea of contesting these parliaments. And this is an important step, because right up until now, Sinn Féin and the Republican movements, going back to the foundation of the Free State and the Six Counties, has always rejected any kind of parliament that was set up under partition. This includes Leinster House, where the Dublin government sits, and Stormont and Westminster. They're all illegitimate. We shouldn't be contesting them except as abstentionist candidates, where we would get voted in, but we wouldn't take the seat. now they're proposing contesting these partitionist parliaments and perhaps even working within them. And this is a change that comes into the Sinn Féin party in the 80s because the leadership are trying to lead the army and its supporters towards this goal without losing them. Does that make sense? You have to kind of strategically engage with it, allow it to kind of take control at some points, but then strategically take the lead yourself. And this is kind of a back and forth process that's going on kind of in both communities, both the nationalist and the unionist, throughout the 80s and 90s, terminating in the Good Friday Agreement, where the idea is they'll set up a power sharing executive, that they will have a parliament that is representative of both quote-unquote sides of this conflict. I mentioned the UUP before, and the UUP under David Trimble was the representative figure for the unionist loyalist community. He was to be the one who would be who was sitting down with the Brits and with Sinn Féin and with the 26 county Irish government throughout these negotiations to hammer out the terms. This executive is not a democratic one on that basis. It is balanced in such a way that both sides will be represented within it. And for contentious votes, there needs to be cross-community support. So there needs to be a majority on both sides of the house. Does that make sense? And what's the other point that's important there that I meant to hit? It's gone out of my head now. Yeah, it needs to have the support, the buy-in of both sides at every time. So this entity will collapse for large periods of time and no longer function. And Westminster will then take control. Everyone from all sides of the border will be periodically going over to Belfast to get these people around the table to figure out how they might move forward. It collapsed for a long period of time. The first one actually was David Trimble. He kept taking it down because there was concerns around the IRA still having guns. The issue of decommissioning was really important. They had to keep flying over weapons inspectors from Canada to be, you know, put into the back of a van with a blindfold on, to then be taken into some remote part of the countryside where they would watch machine guns get taken apart and poured into concrete.
What? That happened? That happened in my lifetime?
That happened in your lifetime. It happened a few times.
That's insane.
David Trimble, the leader of the Ulster Unionist Party, kept on insisting that it wasn't happening enough, and it happened to happen again. And, you know, like, the army did not go away for a long period of time because it's really hard to get people who have been fighting for unconditional British withdrawal for a long time to give up their guns. So that was one reason why it kept on sputtering after the Belfast Agreement. And then you had it collapse again when there was concerns about the IRA still being operational and gathering intelligence. That brought it down for a long time. In more recent periods, you had Martin McGuinness and Arlene Foster. Sorry, actually, I didn't explain the First Minister and the Deputy First Minister thing. So you have two Prime Ministers, basically. The First Minister, as the name suggests, is the chief one, and they will be drawn from the largest party. And of course, historically, this has been the unionist organization. So you've had Ian Paisley, who is the leader of the DUP, sharing power with Martin McGuinness, head of Sinn Féin. And then more latterly, when Ian Paisley stepped down, it was Arlene Foster, and it was Arlene Foster and Martin McGuinness. And in... whenabouts did he collapse it? I can't remember the exact date, but it was, I think, in 2015, 2016. He brought down the executive because of this Cash for Ash scandal. I won't go into the details of it. There's going to be a lot to hit here, and even in the brief time I have. But there was a subsidy scheme being rolled out for people to burn wooden pellets as an energy source. This is supposed to be kind of a green thing, but there was all this concern about where the money was actually going. And Martin McGuinness brought down the executive because Arlene Foster refused to answer questions and the DUP backed her to the hilt. In more recent times, the executive came back in 2016, I think it was. I might actually just have to look that up so I don't embarrass myself. Okay, sorry, this is in 2021. God, this is very recent. So Edwin Poots was leader of the DUP for all of 21 days. And his attempts to engage with the First Minister, his attempts to engage with Sinn Féin as Deputy First Minister Michelle O'Neill to bring back the executive led to a revolt from within his own party, because Sinn Féin had secured an agreement with the British government that they would back this Irish Language Act. Now, the Irish language has been something, and recognition for the Irish language and attempts to promote it within the education system has been something that a large number of activists from the nationalist community in the six counties have been pushing for a very, very long time, as you can imagine. There's a long history of schools that have been taught through All Irish and Gaeltachts being set up in Belfast solely through community effort. No state support, often with state hostility, where they'll be trying to shut down these schools. And securing that kind of recognition from the state would obviously be enormously difficult, because the state is set up precisely in order to repress those elements of the national culture. So this is an important dynamic, because the unionist contingent, it's how do I explain this? They're always facing revolt from people who are willing to be even more insane than they are. Do you know what I mean? There's like, you have the Ulster Unionist Party. In the 70s, when the IRA first begins its activity, you have a split off of it led by Ian Paisley called the Democratic Unionist Party, that want to take a firmer hand with the IRA, that are involved with loyalist paramilitaries. These are death squads backed by the Brits. And as David Trimble from the Ulster Unionist Party is engaging with kind of these processes of shared power or shared executive, the DUP are always nipping at his heels from the extreme right, because it's possible to paint him as someone who is soft on terrorism because he's engaging with Sinn Féin. So that was the DUP's role until Ian Paisley becomes the First Minister and they're able to overtake the Ulster Unionist Party as the hegemonic voice. But of course, then you get the same thing happening from their right. And this is why you get traditional unionist voice, the TUV, led by Jim Allister, who is even more insane than the DUP and rejects the institutions of the peace process to an even greater extent. So just to recap, in ascending order of insanity, UUP, DUP, TUV, and you're talking the whole gamut of racism, anti-Irish racism and also anti-immigrant sentiment. Climate change is made up. Dinosaurs did not exist. The Earth is 1,000 years old. Evolution is not real. The whole gamut of reactionary viewpoints there, they bring it to an absolute T.